Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. Over in Switzerland, the 47th edition of Art Basel has just wrapped up at the city's Messehalle. This year's event saw a vast amount of political art sparking conversation around the fair, especially within the Unlimited section, where artistic heavyweights such as Ai Weiwei were showing installations on a rather grand scale. To talk us through all of this and to assess the current state of the art market, I'm joined by Jane Morris, editor-at-large of the Art newspaper. All that coming up right here on the Monocle Arts Review. Jane Morris, welcome to the show and welcome back to London as well. Tell us in a few words, how was Basel?
Basel was, as always, a kind of absolute sort of overwhelming art fest. Art fest meets collectors, meets the art market, meets half the art world apparently having meetings with each other, and then complaining about the fact that they haven't managed to see the very long list of exhibitions that are on around the town.
And from what I understand, it was a very hectic whirlwind for you over there. How are you feeling about things now in retrospect?
Well, I think it was a very busy fair. The market is cooling down, and I think we're going to be talking about that later. But I don't know if they allowed more people in than usual, but certainly the aisles were packed by the opening day, which was Tuesday. The Unlimited section opened on Monday, but the main fair where most people would be buying opened on Tuesday. And by that evening, it was absolutely rammed. I don't think I've ever seen it so busy.
Good news. Well, then I wanted to start things off today by talking about some of the political art that was on show at this year's fair. It seems everyone was there to make a statement. Jane, before we come back to you, we're going to hear a little bit from Art Basel's global director, Mark Spiegler, in conversation with Monocle's correspondent, Kimberly Bradley.
I think there's more and more of a market for political art. I mean, if you think about there are great collections, for instance, Pamela Joyner, for example, is a great collector from San Francisco who's really interested in political art. And also the fact is, you know, political art is something that some collectors may shy away from, but there are, you know, in terms of museums and curators, it's fantastic, you know, and I think this is a show that's not only about private collectors. It's not about the private jets. It's about the museum directors and the curators and also the biennial curators. So I think it makes perfect sense. And the other thing is, you know, a gallery's job is not to bring works to sell. An artist's gallery's job is to work with artists and figure out how to sell the works that the artists want to make.
Did the selection committee take any of this political work into consideration when they were selecting the galleries this year?
No, but I will say, for example, that a project like Olaf Metzl's rotating door project and feature, for example, had an extra resonance because of what was going on at the time of the selections. You know, I think a project like Alfredo Yar's project in Parkour, you know, which is about the current refugee crisis and about how to resolve that, which is actually spun off of a separate piece that he'd done many years ago in the context of another refugee crisis, obviously has an extra resonance. I mean, I think, you know, for all their rigor, the selection committee members are humans living in our societies, reading our papers, and obviously you're much more attuned to certain things at certain moments.
Mark Spiegler, Global Director of Art Basel, giving his two cents on political art. Of course, a hot topic at this year's fair. Jane, now, you were just saying so many people at this year's fair. How was that resonating with the political art? Were they flying off the wall?
No, in fact, if I'm totally honest, I would say that the more political work was in the sections of the fair that are largely considered a little bit more cultural, shall we say. So it was mostly in evidence in Art Unlimited, which is Art Basel's huge hall where they show really, really massive pieces of art. They are for sale, but I would say that a lot of galleries really bring them for show more than anything else. And then there are programmes like Parkour, which Mark mentioned, which is really a cultural programme. It's events taking place all over the city, and the public are allowed to sort of come into spaces. Some of them are public spaces, some of them ones that are not always open, and see art installed into the city. So I would say that the more controversial work or political work was located in those sections. Having said that, these are the sections people tend to talk about the most. So, I mean, for me, one of the best pieces was Raphael Lozano Hemmer's piece. He did this in conjunction with Christoph Wodichko, who I think helped him do some of the programming. This was a very large piece in the Unlimited section. You walked in and there were surveillance cameras all over the cubed space. And they were picking you up and watching you and pushing the images back, but much larger, onto the walls, if that makes sense. I believe they're the kind of cameras that they use to see if people are possibly terrorists or doing illegal activities. I noticed that when I started photographing, particularly when I photographed the cameras, I would be picked up immediately and blown over the walls. So the way you were behaving influenced whether or not you got picked up by the cameras. And as I say, if you started to do something that looked vaguely suspicious, it seemed to me, you were very quickly would have all the cameras zooming in on you. It's quite a disturbing piece. It's quite fun. It's in one way, it's the kind of ultimate selfie, but it's got a very, very dark undertow to it. I mean, one or two people did see the funny side of it as well. Quite a few people were commenting that they were all hauling their stomachs in once they realised they were going to be in view of the camera. But I mean, the meaning of the piece was obviously considerably more serious than art world vanity.
Obviously, that's not exactly the most subtle of art metaphors getting across there from that piece. What was the response among some of the other people that you spoke to about that particular piece? Did it have the intended effect?
Well, I think Raphael of Zennohammer's work is often very beautiful. So he has a show, another show on in Basel at the Haus der Elektronischen Kunst, the House of Electronic Arts, let's stick to the English, which is in a new art space that's being developed on the edge of the city in a place called the Freilager of the Free Store. And I think some of his works in there were more poetic. Even this one does have a certain poetry to it. I mean, he knows how to make things look very beautiful. He has a very strong aesthetic sense. So the work is a bit less crude than the way, in fact, a lot less crude than the way I described it. That is what it's doing. But aesthetically, the work is very pleasing. It's in these beautiful shades of grey. Images merge and flow in and out of each other. I would say it was one of the very, very popular pieces in the fair. And I think people were talking a lot about the fact that a lot of digital art, and we saw that at the Whitechapel show that was on quite recently, a lot of digital art is not actually that appealing. And I think what we're finding now is that people like Zennohammer are finding ways to make digital art that, yes, it has a message, but it's also aesthetically very pleasing. At least some of it is aesthetically very pleasing. And in many ways, his work has changed somewhat. I mean, a few years ago, he made a piece in Mexico that was a very important piece, where people who remembered the 1968 student massacre were broadcasting. They were standing in the square where the massacre happened. They were broadcasting on microphones so people in the square could hear them. But if you, as a general citizen, wanted to listen to it, you could hear it on radio. And there were these huge beams of light pulsating as the people spoke. And they pulsated all the way across the city. This performance took place at night. Now, that is a less aesthetically beautiful piece, but one with obvious political meaning. I think Zennohammer is increasingly finding ways to marry the two, the aesthetic and the political or content, you know, the more sort of questioning content, in a way that not so many digital artists have been achieving, at least not as successfully as him. So I think people are very interested in the way he's managing this.
Well, let's stay in the unlimited section then. I want to talk about some of the big art on show at this year's Art Basel. I've heard about a few of the large installations that had everyone snapping photos. Can you tell me a little bit about some of your highlights?
Well, I think I've mentioned a couple of them with the Raphael Zennohammer, which I think was one of the best pieces that I saw. I mean, I think another one that everyone really enjoyed and was really very interesting piece, it was by an artist called Hans Op de Bick. And he has taken a huge space and turned it into almost like a collector's library. Everything is grey, everything is muted. There's a lake or pond with lilies floating in it, which is incredibly reminiscent of the Frick collection in New York. And there were very long queues to go into this one. Basically, when you went inside, it had very strange, sort of cathedral-like, slightly Harry Potterish, but also rather desiccated, powdery feel to the whole thing. So I think that he managed to use the space that he was given very, very successfully. Another piece in an entirely different vein was the some often comedic duo Elm Green and Dragset. They made a piece called Secondary. I think a lot of people didn't actually quite understand what they were looking at. You walked into a darkened space with two podiums at either end of the room and seats facing the podia. And there was just a soundtrack in the dark. And basically it was an auction. So it was an auction and the prices were ticking up and the two auctioneers are kind of playing off each other, but they're just these disembodied voices. As I say, I think it puzzled quite a lot of people. I thought it was typical of Elm Green and Dragset to do a piece all about the market in the middle of the art fair. Having said that, Unlimited was, as I say, always a huge highlight of the fair, but I do sometimes start to question it a little bit. I felt that although there were some pieces that worked really, really well on this big scale, increasingly there is a temptation of galleries to show work that I'm really not sure really needed to be that big. So I definitely felt there was work in the fair that was big because it could be, rather than the scale was particularly essential to the artistic experience. I mean, there was one piece which was, I think it was by somebody called Chilpa Ferro, and it was just these kind of plastic bags flicking around on the wall. And I mean, it was huge. It was, there was just, you know, this huge space with these flickering plastic bags, and it just seemed rather just to say large for the sake of large, a bit pointless.
Perplexing. Let's stay on the topic of large, perhaps in a slightly different context, though. We'll talk about sales now, Jane. The mark of a successful fair does lie in the numbers. And this year's fair took place at a time when the art market, well, it could be said it's a little bit shaky. Could you feel that at the fair when you were over there?
I think you could see it. Probably more than feel it, you could see it. The thing that's been interesting is, so basically, auction sales are only one judge of how well the overall market is going. And I think it is always worth saying that within the art market, there are many markets. If a gallery has a great artist and the artist is somebody that everybody is interested in, from museums to collectors, whatever, then they will have a good fair, come what may. So people with the best artists or the most interesting artists will generally do well. Having said that, the auctions this year in New York were basically half the amount of the year before. So everybody knows that the market is cooling down. And I think for me, what was most obvious was, despite all the hustle and bustle, if you actually had a look, particularly in the downstairs section, which is where a lot of the secondary market stuff is, which that basically means a lot of either dead artists or artists who are now very accepted in the canon towards the ends of their careers. Sometimes galleries will be selling it in the primary market. That means the gallery directly represents the living artist. But often this is a section where people have bought works, perhaps at auction, perhaps from collectors, and they're showing it, you know, at Art Basel, because it's the very sort of top work that's available. And I think you could see there was an enormous amount, as I said earlier, of very cool, minimal work. There was an extraordinary amount of Italian work, mid-century Italian work. I think I must have seen more Piero Manzoni's at this fair than I have ever seen. All his white works, not the conceptual work, the white achromes, and people who work in a similar vein. So there was also a lot of the German Zero group. Again, they're very minimal, they're very tasteful. There was a huge amount of monochrome work. There was very little sculpture. When there wasn't monochrome work, it tended to be hard-edged 1960s American minimalism, again, smaller scale, and artists who work now in that vein. And all of these things would tell me, because these are galleries who are not communicating with, you know, it's not a conspiracy. They didn't all sit together and plan to bring this work. It's a sign that the market is playing it safe, because this is the kind of work that looks very, very good in most people's homes. It is very desirable. It's smaller scale. It's mostly two-dimensional. There was some sculpture, of course, but a lot of sculpture was wall reliefs, so normal room-sized things coming off the wall. So I think that told me straight away that the market has cooled. Some of this stuff is not cheap, I should add. I mean, I believe that one of the Manzoni achromes sold for $7 million. So it's not cheap work. But what trophy works there were, as far as I'm aware, have not yet sold. There was a Jackson Pollock, a very expensive Jackson Pollock. There was a couple of very expensive Gerhard Richters. I think they were both priced around the $20 million mark, that I'm pretty sure, as far as I'm aware, have not yet sold. And somebody said to me, which did make me laugh, that you almost started to wish for Jeff Koons, just for a bit of bling in there to lighten the otherwise very Swiss, very German, very, very tasteful, very civilised atmosphere. I mean, I would have been very happy to have a lot of these works in my home, don't get me wrong, but I definitely felt there was a lot less risk taking. The risks were in sections like Unlimited and in the cultural sections like Parkour.
Well, one of the big ticket items that really did catch my attention, Paul McCarthy's Tomato Head. It went for $4.75 million. I mean, that to me, it's a little bit less than some of the other prices that you've just mentioned there. You did say that a lot of the pieces that you found were quite tasteful, that you would be quite happy to have them in your home. I've got a picture here somewhere of Tomato Head. It's an interesting piece, isn't it?
It's well, people love McCarthy, and he was one of the dosts of bad taste in the fair. And you can always guarantee that Paul McCarthy, he's going to be out there to shock and surprise. I did wonder if that had been bought by a museum. And if it wasn't bought by a museum, it has to have been bought by a private collector with a very large, probably private museum space, because you couldn't possibly install that in your home. I mean, McCarthy is, I think he's in his 70s or 80s now. He is the archetypal West Coast bad boy. I mean, I think there was always a very strong market for him. That's really what I'm driving at. I think he's one of those artists that people always want to collect. And that explains why that piece would have been, you know, doesn't really fit my theory, but it sort of does.
Jane Morris, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us today. That indeed does bring us to the end of today's show. Now, don't forget to head to the Art Newspaper's website for all your art news needs. That is theartnewspaper.com. You have been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for an Australian music review with Miff Warhurst. But for now, goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.